Welcome to Crossroads. The Trump campaign is requesting military protection against alleged threats from Iran. And this includes classified assets that are normally reserved just for a sitting president. But, you know, it comes in light of an Iranian plot to assassinate former President Donald Trump, something he's been warned about directly by the U.S. intelligence community. Now, New York Times actually said it. They said that former President Donald J. Trump's campaign has requested a series of additional security measures, including military assets, in conversations with the White House and the Secret Service because of continuing threats to his safety, according to four people briefed on the matter. So, add the exclusive on it. Now, they note further in that exchanges with the White House Chief of Staff, Jeffrey Zients, and the acting Secret Service Director, Ronald L. Rowe, Jr., in the past 2 weeks, Susie Wiles, Mr. Trump's top campaign advisor, said that Mr. Trump had been forced to move, reschedule, or cancel key events because of limits on the service's available resources, according to the people. Again, Trump is campaigning nonstop. He's traveling nonstop. And frankly, there have been quite a few threats to his life doing that. And so he's been given some additional security. They're having trouble keeping up with him. Now, they note this. They say the campaign's request for more security, one of the people said, included sophisticated classified military assets that are used only for sitting presidents. We don't know what that's going to be. It's classified. It also includes the pre-placement of ballistic or bullet-resistant glass on the main battleground states where he would be campaigning most frequently, something they kind of do sometimes but not all the time, and an expansion of temporary flight restrictions over Mr. Trump's residences and campaign sites. And also the Trump team is, in effect, looking for him to be protected at the same level that President Biden is. And Mr. Trump's team has been told that he is being given the highest level of protection available, though no candidate or former president receives what a sitting president does. Meaning, they're giving him every type of security up to, but not including what a sitting president would receive. But Trump is saying that basically because of the threats on his life at this point, including from Iran, that he should be given that level of security. Now, look, I would say personally, given the global security environment, the known threats against Trump's life, again, you've had two confirmed what appear to be assassination attempts against him, possibly a third. I'll get into that in a minute and give my take on that. Also, the fact that Iran has, in fact, been targeting the Trump campaign for cyber attacks. They even, in fact, leaked information on J.D. Vance to a bunch of journalists that they selected. And one of those guys actually even released the documents publicly. Well, look, it does appear the threat is real. Frankly, just on the Iranian hack of the campaign and the release of the documents, that's what they accused Trump of doing back in 2016. When, you know, hackers were accused of breaching the Clinton campaign and, you know, leaking information. When they accused Trump of colluding with Russia, that was the basis of it. And this current case where, again, hackers from Iran actually breached Trump's campaign information and then leaked the information to journalists they selected, and one of those guys actually leaked it publicly, that's what they accused Trump of doing. And the other side, they just did it. Now, look. That being said, the Biden administration, they do appear to be actually taking some of this stuff seriously. The Department of Justice and others, they've actually been working with the Trump campaign, sorry, the intel agencies, they've actually been warning the Trump campaign about threats to his life, including from Iran. Trump was actually briefed on some of that. Keep in mind, this also follows a recent series of arrests carried out by the Department of Justice, including in New York City, where individuals accused of either being Iranian assassins or people working for Iranian assassination networks, some of these individuals were actually arrested in New York. Again, you know, innocent till proven guilty, you know, but they are accused of it. And there's some pretty detailed cases on these alleged Iranian assassination networks running in the United States. And when Iran is making those kinds of threats on that level and Trump is campaigning, you know, it does seem to be justified. They're concerned about it. Now, look, in other news on this note, a suspect was arrested outside a Trump rally in Coachella Valley on Sunday. And one of these individuals, allegedly, again, he tried to show a fake pass to get into this event. He was in possession of unregistered firearms. He's in California. That's illegal there. I'll be talking about this more after we come back from a quick break. Welcome back. A suspect was arrested outside a Trump rally in Coachella Valley on Sunday, and the individual arrested, well, he had fake passes to the event, allegedly again, and was in possession of unregistered firearms. And in California, that'll get you in trouble. Now, look, while the individual's intentions are still unknown, he says he's innocent. Local law enforcement say they may have stopped another attempt on former President Donald Trump's life. They're saying this. This is the Riverside County Sheriff's Department. They say on Saturday, October 12, 2024, at 4:59 p.m., deputies assigned to former President Donald Trump's rally in the Coachella Valley contacted the driver of a black SUV at a checkpoint at the intersection of Avenue 52 and Celebration Drive. They say the male driver, identified as Vem Miller, a 49-year-old resident of Las Vegas, was found to be illegally in possession of a shotgun, a loaded handgun, and a high-capacity magazine. They note that Miller was taken into custody without incident and later booked at the John J. Benoit Detention Center for possession of a loaded firearm and possession of a high-capacity magazine. They say this incident did not impact the safety of former President Trump or attendees of the event. Now look, it's still unclear whether this was an actual assassination attempt. It's also totally possible it was just a man who owned a gun that he had not registered. I want to kind of show you all this. The individual is a Republican. He is known within the Republican and more the conservative community. He's not technically Republican, I think. He's known among them. He's a Trump supporter, a known Trump supporter. The individual, basically, he drove from Las Vegas to California for a Trump rally. It is true, right? The gun laws between the two states are very different. He alleges he didn't know the differences in the gun laws between the states. It is not illegal in Nevada to have unregistered firearms. But on that note, though, it is legal to carry a handgun in your vehicle in Nevada, but it's not legal to drive with a loaded shotgun in the vehicle. Based on what we're being told, right, what we know so far, he was found to have a shotgun and a loaded handgun. With police reports, had the shotgun been loaded, they would have probably said it. Had it been loaded, that would have been a crime in Nevada. They only say that the handgun was loaded, meaning that by Nevada law, technically, he was within line of the law. The problem is he went from Nevada to California, and that's where it gets problematic, because while that may not be illegal in Nevada where he's from, it is illegal in California. Now, let me show you a bit more from what we know from local media. This is, again, the Riverside Press Enterprise, one of the local news outlets. They said that Riverside County Sheriff Chad Bianco told the Southern California News Group on Sunday that he believes Miller, who he said is a member of a right-leaning anti-government group, planned to kill Trump, and that deputies thwarted the plan when Miller presented fake VIP press passes at a checkpoint. And Bianco said this. He said they were different enough to cause the deputies alarm. We probably stopped another assassination attempt, end quote. Now, it notes that Miller, in an interview with Southern California News Group on Sunday, said that he was shocked that he was arrested and accused of trying to harm Trump, who he supports. He said these accusations are a complete bull, and he said, I'm an artist. I'm the last person that would cause any violence and harm to anybody. Now, it says that Miller said he bought the firearms in 2022 for protection after he started receiving death threats. Basically, he started this news outlet, got involved with it, and, you know, kind of reporting the alternate side of the media, and he received a lot of threats because of that. Now, it notes that he had never fired the guns and said he was unfamiliar with the difference between Nevada and California's gun laws. Now, look, also, the individual Miller, he alerted the police that the guns were in his car. So it does not seem that he was trying to smuggle them, you know, into the event, right? When he pulled up, he actually posted a public video on this. He said he pulled up. He told the police, hey, I have guns in the car, while he's trying to park. They searched him and again arrested him, because in California, that was in violation of the law, the issue there, right? At the same time, the individual is accused of presenting fake press passes and a fake VIP pass. That's not a violation of the law. They're not charging him with that by any means, but they're suggesting that that was maybe something that raised suspicion over maybe intent, right? The man who was arrested claims he had a special invitation to the Trump rally from the head of Clark County's Republican Party and claims he did not present the pass at the checkpoint. He says he only had a special entry pass. Now, look, details on this are going to be important. I can tell you as a journalist, some news agencies, most of them, I'd say, they issue their own internal passes for the company, right? Within the company, sometimes you want to be able to identify yourself or you have a key card to access parts of the buildings. A lot of journalists just use those as their identification. Technically, you can register for a pass of a city. Me, for example, being in New York City, I can register for a New York City press pass. The issue is typically cities only give out the official press passes for local news reporters. So, for example, with me, you know, being a journalist since 2006, I probably would not be eligible for a New York City press pass because I don't cover local news. And it's like that in a lot of places. And so if you're covering national news, national politics, typically you will not be eligible for some city press passes. And so if they say that the individual presented a fake press pass, a fake press pass could just be the individual's business card or the identity they use within the company, not so much like a city a city given press pass. And so the details on this are going to be important. You don't have to register as a journalist in the United States to do news. And so this is, again, I understand maybe it's something that raised alarm, but the way these things work, I wouldn't call that a red flag personally. Personally, I have owned a city press pass in the past when I was working in San Diego, but these days I only carry my company press pass, right? The individual does appear to be an independent journalist. He has a Rumble channel. He's with the America Happens Network. He writes on LinkedIn, for example. He spent over 20 years as an investigative journalist, a documentary filmmaker, and content producer, and worked for other media as well. Now, when it comes to the man allegedly presenting a fake VIP pass, that's another thing. The details on this are going to be important. I personally know that if you are gifted a pass to an event with Secret Service security, you do risk getting approached by Secret Service. And so if this man, as he claims, was invited to the event, if he was gifted a pass, that would be something that even if it was legitimate, would still get him, stopped by Secret Service. Although the important thing is here, he was not stopped by Secret Service, he was stopped by police, right? And so the details on that, again, are going to be important as we get more. That said, though, there is something else. One of the more important details could come out within his communications because they are going to be checking those. The sheriff's office told the Epoch Times some additional details on this front. Let me show you. This is the Epoch Times. It says, earlier in the day, Riverside Sheriff Chad Bianco told the Epoch Times in a text message, quote, we arrested a man trying to get in the perimeter with two firearms who ended up saying he was going to kill the president. And that's going to be the important part, right? Bianco confirmed at the press conference that he believes his deputies helped thwart a potential assassination attempt, but declined to comment on the alleged statements made by the suspect regarding Trump. Another man, it says, an Iraqi national who was singled out as a hit by police dogs trained to identify explosives, he was turned away from the event, according to Bianco as well. If you have an Iraqi man and dogs trained to find explosives hit, meaning the dogs alert the police that they smell something and you turn the guy away and don't check him, that's a bit problematic, but that also happened at the event. Now, with all this, of course, right? We're still waiting for details on this. The suspect was being held on just $5,000 bail. He published a video afterwards from a hotel room. Based on that, I assumed he posted the $5,000 bail. If you get out on bail for $5,000, they probably don't deem you a threat. I'm just saying, right? He has a court date set for January 5th, 2025. He's booked on charges for possessing a loaded firearm and a high-capacity magazine. things that are illegal in California. He is not being charged with trying to assassinate Trump. We'll see what happens as they find more information. Again, the big allegation here is that they say that he claimed he wanted to kill the president. It's not clear what president they're talking about, just being clear. But again, innocent until proven guilty. In either case, that kind of statement will get you in trouble. We'll see what happens, and I'll keep you all updated on it. Now, folks, in other news, I just got back from some on-the-ground reporting in North Carolina. I went to a lot of the areas that have been very badly damaged by Hurricane Helene. Right now, we're working on putting together a short feature on that. We want to get it out quick, so, you know, we'll do something shorter. In the meantime, though, I wanted to give you just some updates from what I saw on the ground. I want to talk about what I saw happening there. I also investigated some of the different rumors that have been going around. I'll be talking about this, though, only on EpicTV.com. So for those of you watching on YouTube, Facebook, X, Rumble, come and join us on EpicTV.com. Not only will you get access to the rest of my show, but you also get access to my live Q&A, where I talk to y'all and answer some questions. Click the link in the description below. Come and join us on EpicTV.com. And before we continue, let me show you a quick trailer for my documentary, The Final War, the 100-Year Plot to Defeat America, which you can also watch on EpicTV.com. And with that said, I'll see you for the rest of this episode in just a short moment.
The greatest threat facing the United States is the CCP.
The Epic Times investigation team had studied the CCP for years, but what we uncovered was yielding evidence beyond our imagination.
With Chairman Mao, with the Prime Minister, our talks have been characterized by frankness.
The Clinton administration said, oh, don't worry about it. This will be a poison pill for China.
China's strategic goal is to make sure that the U.S. has four enemies, and one of them must be a terrorist group.
We are giving of our life's blood so that the Chinese Communist Party can survive and thrive.
Welcome back. Now, look, I just got back from some on-the-ground reporting in North Carolina. I was there from Thursday night to Sunday evening. I went to several areas that have been badly damaged by Hurricane Helene. We're working on putting together a short feature on that. In the meantime, again, I want to give some updates on the situation, what's happening on the ground, and I also want to talk about some of what I investigated on the different rumors going around. You might have heard everything under the sun. I looked into these different claims. Now, look, the damage in some areas was really severe. I heard some really heartbreaking stories. For example, in Shenandoah, different areas like that. Really, folks, the damage is significant. It looks like a bomb went off. There's sinkholes. We saw a gas station, cars had fallen. It was a gas station / used car place. Cars falling into the sinkhole, I mean, buildings just blown out the back like a bomb went off. It was horrible. You have a lot of people who are still missing. One of the issues is that the storm surge caused the rivers to expand. I mean, if you can look at the water lines on the houses, it went up past the second story of many houses. And people, for example, trying to escape it, going into their attics, sometimes may have drowned. Sometimes the houses themselves could not withstand the water surge and broke. I mean, there was some houses completely wrecked. There's cars sticking up the sides of houses. One area I went to, if you know these big rigs, like, you know, trucks used for shipping and the trailers they have in the back, I saw in one area, we have video of it, two of those stacked on top of each other, right? The backs of big rigs stacked on top of each other, and what looked like a whole building worth of debris is just smashed on top of it. I talked to a woman, or I talked to some individuals who said that there was a woman in the area. You know, she was walking with her infant in her arms trying to escape. She slipped, fell. Her infant got, you know, swept away by the rivers. I talked to some people. Some people did not want to go on camera, especially the ones who had suffered that kind of loss. One individual, he's an illegal immigrant. I don't know where he's from exactly. A lot of them totally did not want to go on camera because they're afraid of getting deported. But this individual, his wife got, he was right by the river. His wife got swept away by the river. He actually jumped in the water after her, swimming to rescue her. I mean, thank God there was a shipping container in the river that had gotten stuck. They slammed into it, and that saved their lives. They were able to climb on top of that and got rescued. There were a lot of stories like this. That said, though, local residents and nonprofits, they pulled together really, really fast. They're getting donations from people all across the United States. They're even getting donations from other countries. I was told, for example, they're getting donations like from like Switzerland and stuff like that. People are driving down from Canada to help. I saw people from all across the country driving there to help. It was incredible. This is something actually really interesting. Basically, within the first 2 days of the disaster, the people in that area went out there, started helping their neighbors. You have Christian groups getting donations and, you know, some of these big, you know, relief organizations that work with homeless and stuff. They're getting warehouses full of donations, and they're just shipping it out like a machine. You have veterans who banded together and formed like full-blown military operations doing, they even like had like helicopters going. I'll show you this. It was incredible. Basically getting food out to people who are just totally isolated in the mountains. They have full intel operations, working on tips, finding, you know, if you have a family member who's stuck somewhere, if you know somebody stuck somewhere, they're getting that, they're bringing it out. Within the first 2 days, the whole community, the whole area pulled together, and they basically had things running with hot food and meals, like full-blown, where people, when the government, you know, arrived maybe a week later in some areas, you know, they're offering people like Spam and food, you know, and people are like, well, we already have better food than that, you know. That's kind of one of the things that happened. On the rumor front, I looked into claims that government workers were stealing from people. I know there were rumors going around. I heard them that people said, oh, FEMA's stealing our generators. This is what happened. It turned out there were local bandits or gangs, whatever you want to call them. People were dressing up like government workers, and they were robbing people. And that was not the government doing that. That was people dressing up like that to cheat people and rob people. So you had gangs doing that. I know for a fact that, you know, in New York City, when we had Hurricane Sandy, you had the same thing happening. There were some gangs that were going door to door, and they were like knocking, hey, I'm with FEMA. People opened their door and they'd rob them. That happened a lot in New York, especially in lower Manhattan when we had Hurricane Sandy. Same thing was happening there, and that caused a lot of, you know, rumors to get around. The National Guard, local authorities, other agencies, I saw them there. They're working very hard to get utilities working again. It did seem that most of the relief efforts were on the community level. Like the overwhelming majority of the relief efforts were on the community level. The food drives, the stuff getting people water, it was the communities. It was average people, nonprofits, and donations. And it was working like, it was working more efficiently than the best run company I've ever seen in my life. It was incredible. But that said, you know, for example, a lot of the local government agencies, they were getting the power back on. I saw a lot of guys working, for example, on the power lines, getting those back up and running. One of the issues immediately after the disaster, for example, the gas lines were all broken, and they were pumping natural gas, you know, which can cause explosions up. They had to shut that down. There's a lot of roads out, some very dangerous areas. On the government side, they're more working, it seems, on the infrastructure level, based on what I saw. I did see that, you know, military, I think they have the 101st Airborne there. They had Chinooks, you know, like the big cargo helicopters. They were coming in one after another at the airport. They had just stacks of good, you know, stacks of pallets of stuff waiting to be delivered. And it's a big operation. Again, I saw it with my own eyes. Some of them were also cooperating with the folks on the ground. Some of the more broad kind of community level operations, including some of the ones with helicopters, they were working with 101st Airborne. They were working to an extent with National Guard. FAA had given some of them, you know, clearance, so they were cleared to run helicopters and airplanes and everything else. There were a lot of misunderstandings with that from what I get early on. I'm going to detail some of that. Really, some of the stuff happening there, I've never seen anything like it. It was incredible. I talked to one woman. She said she was talking to FEMA out there, and she said even FEMA was telling this woman that they had never seen anything like it. FEMA was there. I didn't see much of them. I'll be totally honest with you. The only FEMA presence I personally saw was there was a church I went to, and I went to many areas. There was a church I went to, and on their level, they had a booth set up with internet. Starlink has been a lifesaver in that area, and they were letting people register for FEMA. It seems that a lot of people are, basically is what's happening. They were getting better quality food from local donations and from the communities. People were bringing in insulin, generators, diapers, feminine products, food, heaters, you name it, clothes. People were getting better donations at the local level than any government service could really provide on that level for some of the areas. Even, for example, some of the remote areas, you had guys flying helicopters bringing in bales of hay for the farm animals. Because the farm animals, there was a lot of silt, and the whole place was like just covered in mud, basically. And when it dried out, it was dust everywhere. The animals can't eat that. And so they were flying in even bales of hay to feed people's farm animals. Now, for a lot of people, one thing that was shared with me is that they handled a lot of the relief efforts themselves, again, within the first few days. So when government aid did arrive several days or a week later, again, a lot of the locals were already, out of the woods, so to speak. Many of them, their lives were not in danger anymore because their neighbors came to rescue them. That said, I do know that some of the initial relief efforts carried out on the individual level, especially with the helicopters, I was told that people were getting, they were reaching some people and they were on their last bottle of water, they were on their last can of food, and they were getting to them just in time. I don't know if there's still areas they haven't reached. Some of the individuals I was talking to said they reached basically every area they know about so far, and that's kind of where things are at. I heard some incredible stories. I overheard some people talking. I didn't want to butt into their conversation. But, just locals talking about their neighbors and so on. In one area, they had search and rescue. A woman was in her car. Her car got buried in silt and buried in debris. They have search and rescue dogs going out looking for people, right? That's one of the things that, on the government side they're doing. I even saw Border Patrol out there. They're doing that. They're doing search and rescue. One of the dogs did a hit, meaning that the dog found someone, right? These are searching for people. And they dug it up. There was a woman who had been trapped in her car under all of that for 5 days, and she had 3 bottles of water in her car. And those 3 bottles of water kept her alive. And, they rescued her. FEMA was going to the homes of businesses. And so, in terms of what I heard about FEMA's presence there, most of what they're doing, they're going to homes, they're going to businesses, and they're trying to assess the damage because they want to get people on track to rebuilding. I did find a lot of people have been very wary of them because there's all kinds of rumors going around. Basically, what I found, did you ever play telephone when you were a kid, where you get a line of kids, and, you get told one sentence, and then you tell the next person in line that sentence, and the next person in line, and the next person in line, and, by the time you get to the end of the line, that sentence is something absolutely different. The problem you're having in this area is that people don't have internet, they don't have phones, they don't have any way of getting information from the outside. people are telling them rumors, they're hearing rumors, they're changing the rumors, and it's kind of taking on a life of its own. So there's a lot of rumors going around, and you know, you talk to one guy and you hear one thing, you talk to someone else, you hear something else. Because of some of the rumors going around, and I understand the basis of this, a lot of people believe that the government's going to, like, steal their homes is the big concern. I know that in Hawaii and Lahaina, that was one of the big concerns people had, was that, you know, they don't want them to rebuild because they basically, maybe not the government, but some local groups want to take the property because it's valuable. A lot of people in the area, that's what they believe. And so they think that, you know, for mining operations or whatever else, that there are people who are plotting to take their homes. The result of that, again, believe what you want on that. I can't prove or disprove that, right? Believe what you would like. But the result of that is that a lot of people are not letting FEMA work with them. I actually personally was told, one of the guys I was traveling with for a bit, he said that he talked to some FEMA guys. They said they went into the haulers, you know, where you have kind of the hill people, and they beat up the FEMA workers, actually. They beat them up, they threw them in the back of the truck and drove them down the mountain. I mean, look, and I feel bad for these guys who are just doing their jobs, but just emphasizing kind of what that's like for them, right? I know there were rumors that air traffic was blocking flights. Now, I talked to civilian volunteers, two different areas, for example. One area was behind a Harley-Davidson building, and they had a big grassy area. They were running helicopters, like 20 flights a day, getting goods out. That was run by civilians. A lot of the guys were former special forces. Incredible operation, large scale. They had FEMA clearance. They had air traffic control clearance. FAA actually designated them, you know, and let them run that. They were in no way interfering with it. And so that wasn't true there. There was also an airfield where they're running private planes doing the same thing. Again, this is civilian level, not government, and they again have clearance to do it. From what I gathered, some of the rumors around air traffic blocking people, some of it was because in the early days they were trying to get an assessment of the area and they grounded some flights, from what I've been told. Also because when Biden flew in, because, you know, Secret Service protection, they had to ground flights. That kind of sent a bad message because people said, oh, we can't fly our helicopters, we can't fly the planes. And that caused a lot of rumors going around saying that air traffic was blocking them. Based on what I was told, that's kind of what happened. When I was there, they were absolutely not blocking it. There were no issues with it. And I have it on video. I'll show you all once we get this up. They were running constant flights. Independent people, volunteers, constantly running flights, and they were not being interfered with. Border Patrol, this is another issue. Border Patrol showed up. Again, one of the reasons I was told they were there is because they were doing search and rescue operations. Border Patrol, one of their skills is to find traffickers and find people so they have dogs trained to do search and rescue. They were there because they were searching in the debris because, you know, basically when the water came in, it created just layers and layers of silt, and you have just piles of debris all over the place. There are people buried under that, whether it's the silt in the river, whether it's the debris. At this point, I don't know if people could survive 2 weeks. Miracles happen, but, you know, they're looking for those people. When Border Patrol went there, that freaked out a lot of the illegal immigrants. The rumor going around the illegal immigrant communities there was that they were there to deport them all. And so many of the illegal immigrants actually fled into the mountains because they thought Border Patrol was there to arrest them, not to do search and rescue. I was told some terrible stories from people there about that. For example, in one of the local areas I was in, some of the illegal immigrants fled into the mountains. They thought they were going to be deported. They had an infant with them. The infant died from the cold in the mountains. You know, you hear a lot of really heartbreaking stories like that. There's a lot of misunderstandings going on there. There's a lot of rumors. People, again, are kind of cut off right now, and so they can't really get outside information, and so they're just hearing a lot of things, and they're coming to their own conclusions based on one incident here or one incident there, right? Also, I can say people were not being blocked from delivering goods. That was just a rumor. It was not true. There was massive operations bringing goods in. I'll show you all once the video is edited. We'll get it out as soon as we can. There was a massive operation run by average people and by nonprofits and, like, you know, retired veterans and stuff. They had truckloads, pallet after pallet after pallet of goods going out. They were not being blocked. From what I've gathered, a lot of the rumors about them being blocked, that comes because a lot of the roads in the first few days of the disaster, some of the roads were out, some of the bridges were out. I personally drove by a lot of areas like that. For example, I was driving, there was one bridge, they wouldn't let us cross it. They turned us around. We looked at that bridge, the foundation was cracked. The bridge was like this, you know, the bridge was broken. I actually saw one person drive over it in a small vehicle. Like, they had these side-by-sides, you know, not like an actual car. It was more like, if you want to do it, it's on your own life. Some of the mountain roads, the roads had washed away. I do know that you had a lot of individuals out there with chainsaws cutting logs because there were logs blocking roads. I do know one guy who was cutting it, and you know, he got some trouble from highway patrol. They're like, "Hey, you guys can't be out here," and they're like, "What do you mean?" That was within the first couple days. Based on what I saw, that was very limited. You did have some incidents like that, but it was in no way large scale. People were not being blocked from delivering goods. It was just a rumor, and it was because, based on what I've been told, some areas they were not letting you pass. There were other ways around, but the roads were destroyed. The bridges were either destroyed or extremely dangerous to cross. And I think that caused some misunderstandings. I saw it with my own eyes. I was there. Again, yeah, that's kind of what's been happening. That said, folks, on that note, what I saw in North Carolina was one of the most incredible things I have ever witnessed. The way that people came together on this, politics and race and everything else, it went right out the window. People are helping each other out like I have never seen before. It was working more effectively than than like an Amazon delivery service. People were working this thing, and it was like a well-oiled machine. I have never seen anything like it. And despite the disaster, despite everything, a lot of people I talked to were in pretty high hopes. These were some incredible people, really resilient people, and, you know, it's that Appalachia spirit, right? It was incredible. And again, I just got back like late last night. Our flight got delayed. And so I'll be, you know, trying to get this out as soon as I can. So stay tuned for that. That said, folks, let's jump into some questions. Let's see here. I went a bit longer than that because I want to give you all kind of an update on it, right? Let's see. James Dyson, you're saying, great example of why America does not need federal government to get in the way. I heard a lot of people saying that. And to be honest, after being there, I can understand why people in Appalachia feel that way. It actually seems that's kind of what happened from what I gathered. Basically, you know, the disaster hit, ongoing disaster. Disaster relief typically can't come in while there's an ongoing disaster. They're going to come in afterwards. What happened was, again, the disaster hit. Immediately, the local communities responded. A lot of it was churches. It was a lot of the veteran community, like, the military guys. They took ownership of the situation within the first couple days. And, you know, you had some, like, good old boy, you know, kind of backwoods guys. Some of those guys even, like, jimmy-rigged, like, and built roads to some of the areas where the roads have been taken out. I assume that the government's probably going to have to check and make sure the roads are like safe enough to drive on, but they built makeshift roads in some of the areas where the roads were destroyed. I met one guy, he was wearing a dress, folks. I don't understand it, it's his thing. But this dude, he actually, he organized people to get out with chainsaws and cut down the trees that were blocking the roads. This guy, I think he says he's a woman, good on him, right? He was organizing food drives, and you know what? People there did not even care about whatever this guy thinks. This person was a hero in the local area and did incredible work and probably saved a lot of people's lives. I mean, I'm not saying they're all like that. That was one case. But my point is people didn't really care what you believed. They didn't care what color your skin was. They didn't care where you were from. They just saw you as a human being. And it was amazing, just being honest. It was amazing what I saw. It was contrast, because on one side you heard some horrible stories. I heard some heartbreaking stories. I had a Mexican woman, crying on my shoulder, telling me some of the stuff. You know what I mean? It was rough, folks. But you saw some really incredible things just on people helping each other out. It was amazing. Aaron Shimano, you're saying in Japan it sometimes happens that organized crime members help people during disasters quicker than the government can send help. They do that in part because their criminal business model depends on a lot of protection money, not straight up theft. Yeah, well, Japan, I know the Yakuza in Japan, they're an interesting criminal group in Japan. The Yakuza, they have like public faces. They have like a public website, and they have like pseudo public operations there. I know the Yakuza are a bit different from some of the other type stuff. This is one of the complicated, and you're right. This is one of the complicated things with some of the organized criminal groups. I know in Mexico, for example, some of the cartels run hospitals. Some of the cartels do community work, so to speak, because they want good relations with the community. And so you actually do find gangs sometimes do that. When I was living in Jackson Heights, Queens, and, Black Lives Matter was going to do some riots in Jackson Heights. Jackson Heights is like a migrant community. It's a lot of, my neighbors were mostly, I had a lot of Dominican neighbors. I had a lot of people from Venezuela, I believe, in the area. It was a lot of illegal immigrants where I lived. I don't think anybody in my building was a native English speaker, let's put it that way. When Black Lives Matter was rolling in to do, their protests, and they were like burning down buildings and breaking windows in different parts of Manhattan, like Soho, it was wild, but like Latin Kings, a gang, and like MS-13 were banding together to protect the community from Black Lives Matter. And BLM, they ended up not coming there because people were like, why are you guys going to like an illegal immigrant community? You get things like that sometimes. Sometimes gangs, yes, they're criminals. Yes, they do terrible things. But sometimes, too, they do sometimes protect their block. And, because it's their family members. And a lot of the guys are kind of like a little more tribal in their thinking, right? They're protecting their family, protecting their friends. You do get guys like that. I don't support gangs by any means. I don't support them, but I do know a lot of former gang members who are pretty incredible people who've changed their lives and have, do a lot of things like that. But it is true sometimes you do find them helping out in the communities. Again, when disaster hits, people are still people, right? And so that's what you start seeing. Ashley from California, you're saying California is traditionally blue. Any thought on why Trump did an appearance in Coachella so close to Election Day instead of focusing on swing states? This has been something really interesting Trump has been doing. And I think this is something that came about. I think this is something that came about, funny enough, because of the criminal charges against him. Trump basically was stuck in New York. Stuck in the tri-state area, right? Because he had to stay in New York to, you know, stand trial. And they weren't letting him leave. So Trump was doing, you know, Trump campaign events in New York. And New York is hard blue, right? He was going to Pennsylvania and some of the local areas. Pennsylvania is a swing state, so it makes sense. But what he found, I think, was that a lot of people were showing up. And there are a lot of voters in this area, in these areas, who were supporting him in areas you wouldn't think would have a lot of support. You know, he went to New Jersey, which is a blue state, and he had huge support there. In my perspective, I think they may have seen that that's more effective. Because, look, if you're preaching to the choir, who are you converting, right? If the only people you talk to are the people who you already have on board, why are you doing it? And so it actually makes sense, I think, that Trump was going to areas where he does not have the vote secured because he's trying to win those votes. California is an interesting area. You know, I'm from San Diego originally. I have a lot of family in Riverside, which is, I believe, where Trump was at, Riverside County. My mom lives out there, for example. My sister lives out there. Riverside County is pretty conservative. Same thing with like Marietta and, you know, that Temecula, that whole area. It's very conservative typically. In California, the blue areas are mostly like Los Angeles and San Francisco. But if you go to the country areas in between, it's a lot of Republicans or, you know, just conservatives. California was a blue state until Reagan. What happened was, is, you know, Ronald Reagan gave citizenship to a lot of illegal immigrants. And when he gave citizenship to the illegal immigrants, it flipped California from a red state to a blue state. The change now is that a lot of Latinos, they're shifting towards Trump. And the Latino vote, that's Los Angeles. You know, Los Angeles is the second largest Spanish-speaking city in the world, next to Mexico City. If Trump gets the Latino vote, he could flip California. And so I think it totally makes sense Trump was out there campaigning. You know, again, San Diego, where I come from, it's a military community. You have Camp Pendleton there. You know, I come from a military family. My grandpa's age type guys, my great uncles and stuff, most of them were in the military. And, you know, because I'm, you know, part of my family's Hawaiian Filipino, I grew up in a multi-generational household where, you know, grandma, grandpa, aunts, uncles, cousins, we all lived under the same roof for a bit. You know, so I grew up in a military household because of that. You have a lot of military guys there. And, you know, San Diego used to be a red county, for example. It used to be, I think it still is technically, but you have a lot of places there that will probably vote Trump. And Trump now probably has to win Los Angeles. If he can win Los Angeles and get the Latino vote, he could potentially flip California. And so I think it does make sense. You know, again, we'll see, right? We'll see what happens. That's, to be honest, that's probably a long shot. But, you know, we'll see. Things are kind of wild these days. I can say when I was in North Carolina, I was talking to one guy, kind of an old timer. He ran like the postal office. He said he was a lifelong Democrat. And he said this election, that he said personally he thinks that North Carolina will go Trump. He said this guy who was a lifelong Democrat told me that he's not going to vote Democrat at the very least. He says he doesn't know if he's going to vote Trump, but at the very least he's not voting Democrat. And so it's interesting. I think the disasters there are having a pretty big effect on how people view the administration right now. And, you know, that perception is not just limited to North Carolina. That could actually have a pretty big ripple effect. And again, you know, we'll see. Realityisreal.com, you're saying, hey, Josh, it's so good to hear that so many everyday citizens are willing to help in times of natural disaster. Human nature can be very beautiful. It's truly heartwarming. Yeah, I had an interesting journey there. You know, it was a lot. I mean, it was a lot of hugging and a lot of storytelling and long discussions with people. It was amazing. I'll be honest, folks. If any of you are having trouble seeing good in the world right now, maybe consider taking a weekend in North Carolina, because you'll see some incredible people. On that note, some of the areas are up and running. I was in Bryson City, for example. I was staying at one of the hotels there. Bryson City, the restaurants are running. They rely on tourism, and they're worried about, you know, the future of their businesses. They do need tourists if you want to take a nice weekend somewhere. I was hanging out at the brewery talking to people around. They had like a fire outside, just chatting with people. And you meet some incredible people coming through, just as an example. Some of the areas around the disaster are up and running. I can say for sure Bryson City was fine. At this point, it's a little dangerous on some of the roads, but for the most part, any roads that are dangerous, you have police there, you have guys directing traffic. They're making sure that things are relatively safe, just being clear. Some of the areas have boil warnings for water. Bryson City, as far as I saw, did not. So, you know, you can shower there without having to worry about it. But again, you know, it goes place by place. But it was incredible, to be honest. And it's true, like, reality is real, the same. Human nature can be beautiful. Some of the religious organizations there, the churches and stuff, they were doing incredible work. You had people who were, you know, I don't know if they're religious or not, just people who were chefs, who had restaurants. You know, they brought in, I saw in one area they brought in, like, their smokers, and they were doing, like, full-on barbecue, smoking meats, and having feasts for all the people who were affected. And they had food better than you find in some restaurants, you know. People were contributing whatever their skill set was. I saw one woman, she was giving free haircuts, you know, because that was her skill. She was a hairdresser, and she was giving people haircuts, and that's what she was doing. It was incredible. Again, if any of you feel you're having trouble seeing goodness or hope right now, consider a trip to North Carolina. Although, you know, keep in mind that there's still relief efforts going on. I don't want to flood them with people right now, but I do know some of the areas, they need tourism. Bryson City needs tourism. Hot Springs, they're suffering disaster right now. A lot of the business there, they're destroyed. But the people there are wondering what they can do. I don't think you could find anything for tourism in Hot Springs, but you know, maybe in a few months. You know what I mean? California gal, you're saying, so what will the local response negate the concept that those people will get upset? The government did not do more, so they will vote Republican? So here's the thing. There were a lot of rumors going around about government blocking supplies or stealing things or whatever else. This is the reality. Based on what I saw, a lot of it was based on very small incidents. So, for example, there's a guy trying to drive to his family member out in some area, and the road is destroyed or the bridge is destroyed. And the police there say, hey, you guys can't pass here. There's no road ahead. And that guy gets angry because his loved one is stuck back there. And that guy goes back and tells everybody, hey, they blocked me from delivering supplies. And that just kind of snowballed into a lot of the rumors. You know, the flights maybe got grounded for a day, especially when Biden went in, because, you know, Secret Service protection, they had to make sure planes aren't in the air. That spread rumors because they say, hey, they're not letting us get flights out and so on. There were a lot of things like that. Small incidents that caused people to say they blocked me from doing this, they did this. But in no way did that represent the full picture. And again, what I saw, the government there was more, the whether it's local or state or federal, NYPD was there, for example. NYPD was bringing in stuff all the way from New York. There were people from all over, different states coming in to help. So you had law enforcement and services from other states going there. They were there helping. A lot of them were working on infrastructure. They were working on getting the gas fixed and running so that there's not poison gas leaking into the air. They were working on doing search and rescue in the rivers. They were working on getting the power lines back up. They were working on getting the roads repaired or doing security in places like that to make sure people don't drive off the cliff. Because you had some pretty sheer drops on some of those mountain roads. And in some areas, like the railing was out. Some areas, part of the road was destroyed. I personally drove through some of those areas. You have bridges that are compromised and look like they're going to collapse. Epic Times, we had a story. There was a house on a bridge, blocking a bridge that you could not get around. There's a lot of things like that, and that just caused a lot of rumors. That said, though, for a lot of people, what they saw was this. The disaster hit. There was an immediate need for aid. The first couple days of the disaster was the most deadly and most dangerous, and that is when they needed help the most. The locals immediately organized and got together and did what they needed. And when a lot of the services arrived 5 days, a week later, a lot of them felt, they needed on the infrastructure side, but on the, hey, we need food, we need someone to dig out my cousin because he's trapped under his house. A lot of that had already been done by the locals. And so the perception among the locals was it was a little bit too little too late for a lot of them. Although they do see stuff being done now, a lot of them felt that those first couple days were the most important. And what they saw was that the locals in those communities did the most work. And that's kind of the perception right now. The other side of it, they got like $750. I had a guy telling me, he's like, yeah, they gave us $750. They gave it to them like 2-3 days before rent was due. And rent for like your average house in some of these areas is $2,000. So they were like, gee, thanks. I can pay almost half a month's rent. Thank you. And that was kind of the feeling. You know what I mean? I don't by any means want to undermine, government efforts. I actually do think there were a lot of rumors that I found to be not true. But I do think that a lot of people did feel that it was not fast enough. And a lot of them did feel that they didn't get the types of real targeted support that they needed in some areas that the local communities were able to provide. And because of that, the people I talked to, and I talked to people from all different political backgrounds, a lot of them do think it will affect the elections. You know what I mean? And so we will see. All right, folks, that said, I think we're going a bit late. So, man, it's been quite the weekend. I got in late last night. My plane got delayed like twice. So, I got in a bit late. But, folks, thank you so much for being here. Again, I'm working on doing, I'm not doing like a documentary on this. I'm trying to get something quicker. I will let you know when that's up. I'm working hard on it right now. So stay tuned for that. That said, again, join me tomorrow, 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time. As always, folks, help us get the word out, share this episode. And as always, please take care of yourselves, stay informed, and stay free. Thank you.